The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling a book that, frankly, it kind of ripped away all my romantic notions about creation and just replaced them with, well, a battle plan.
Huh. Sounds intense.
It is. We are diving into Stephen Pressfield's Modern Manifesto for Action, The War of Art, Winning the Inner Creative Battle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a big one. And it's really more than just a book for, you know, artists or writers in the traditional sense.
Definitely.
I think our mission today is really to cut through the noise and maybe answer one of the most agonizing questions for anyone trying to achieve something big. Could be an entrepreneur, a student, anyone really. Why do we feel like we sabotage ourselves, right, when we're getting close to something meaningful? You know, we're here to give you Pressfield's blueprint for beating that that fierce, invisible opponent he talks about.
Right. Because I think we all carry this assumption, don't we, that creation is purely about talent or maybe waiting for the right mood, the right moment.
Mm-hmm.
And Pressfield just challenges that immediately. He basically says the creative life isn't some peaceful walk in the park. It's a war, a full-scale war against this powerful internal enemy.
And he calls that enemy resistance.
Exact resistance.
And, you know, that framing changes everything. Suddenly, if you're struggling, it's not because you're flawed or you lack talent.
Right.
It's because you're actually in the fight. You're engaged in this, like, strategic battle. But before we get into the tactics, maybe we should talk about the guy who wrote the manual.
Good idea, because Pressfield's perspective isn't from, like, academia or theory.
No, not at all. Yeah. It's drawn straight from survival, from experience.
Yeah, his story is kind of legendary, especially in creative circles, because it's a story of, well, failure.
Yep.
For a long time.
It really is.
Yeah.
He's famous now for historical fiction, you know, Gates of Fire and others.
Mm-hmm.
But that success only came after decades, like 30 years. Of what he himself calls his wilderness years.
30 years, can you imagine, just struggling away?
Yeah, think about that, 30 years of trying. He was, what, a truck driver?
Truck driver, bartender, copywriter, basically anything to pay the bills.
All while feeling this, like, relentless pull to write, this calling, but just failing. Consistently failing to finish the work that matter.
Decades of rejection letters. It's brutal.
It is. And I think what makes his perspective so distinctive, so powerful, is that he's coming at creativity from this place of really knowing failure intimately.
Yeah. He knows what it feels like when resistance wins, day after day after day.
Right. And that's why his approach frames creativity through this lens of, well, warfare, really. Discipline, even stoicism.
Not inspiration.
No, not fluffy inspiration. He's talking about the grind.
Yeah.
Showing up. And that stoic connection is key, I think.
Yep.
He teaches you to focus completely on the internal stuff. The effort, the act of sitting down, doing the work, because you just can't control the external results. You know, the book sales, the reviews, whether people like it.
Right. You can only control showing up.
Exactly. He's writing from the trenches, offering this hard-won, really pragmatic wisdom.
That's a powerful way to ground it. So, okay, if we're treating this book as a guide for anyone trying to make a change, not just artists, but like the manager launching a tough project or someone learning a new skill.
Yeah, absolutely.
How does Pressfield structure the fight? What's the plan?
He lays it out almost like a military campaign or maybe a three-act drama. Defines the enemy, then gives you the battle plan.
Okay, let's start with the diagnosis then. Act one.
Act one is all about defining the enemy, resistance. This is where he really dissects this subtle internal saboteur.
The thing that trips us up.
Yeah, the thing that uses all those familiar tools, procrastination, perfectionism, self-doubt, basically, to keep you stuck, keep you safe and small.
Okay, so that's the enemy identified. Act two must be the counterattack.
And that's the battle plan. Turn professional. And the core solution isn't, you know, more therapy or going on a retreat.
No magic bullet.
No.
Yeah.
It's adopting this strict, almost militant mindset of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Showing up consistently, treating your calling, whatever it is, like a serious job, no matter how you feel that day.
Regardless of mood. Okay. And that leaves act three. This part always gets my attention because it feels a bit, well, mystical.
Beyond resistance.
Right.
Accessing the higher realm. Yeah, it does get a bit metaphysical.
Right.
He explores how that sheer discipline, just showing up day after day, paradoxically opens the door to, well, outside help, what he calls the muse.
Okay, we'll unpack that. But the big takeaway for the listener here, the really empowering part, is the reframe, isn't it?
Absolutely. The struggle you feel, that heavy resistance, it's not proof that you're unworthy or on the wrong path.
It's the opposite.
Exactly. The weight of the difficulty is actually the proof that this thing, this endeavor, is absolutely critical for your soul's growth. Resistance only attacks the important stuff.
Wow. Okay, that reframe alone is huge. It flicks self-doubt on its head. So let's dig into Act One. Resistance. It keeps us from the unlived life, he says. What are its key traits? Is it always just obvious procrastination?
Rarely that simple. Pressfield says resistance is much more sophisticated. He gives it three key characteristics. First, it's universal and impersonal.
Meaning?
Meaning it affects everyone. Doesn't matter if you're a Nobel Prize winner or writing your first blog post.
Yeah.
And it never takes a day off. It's like gravity, but for the soul.
So if I feel it hitting me hard, it's not because I'm uniquely broken?
Nope. Just part of the game. And second, he says it's insidious.
Sneaky.
Very sneaky. It uses really sophisticated lies and rationalizations. It whispers things like, oh, I need more training soon, or I should really clean the garage before I start. Or
this idea just needs another year of research.
Exactly. Often, these are perfectly reasonable, even productive activities. But they act as a mask, a way to avoid launching the real thing, the scary thing. Doom scrolling. That's pure modern resistance.
Oh, man, that hits close to home. Okay. Universal, insidious, but the most powerful one you mentioned is that it's infallible. Tell us about fear being a compass.
This is, I think, the genius part. The intensity of your fear, your dread about a particular project or calling, it's directly proportional to how important that thing is for your destiny.
So the more scared I am,
the more certain you can be that this is the thing you have to do.
Yeah.
Resistance opposes your growth, your evolution. So that fear,
it
becomes the indicator, the compass needle pointing straight towards your true north, your purpose.
That completely changes how you view dread. It's not a warning sign to stop. It's confirmation to go.
Precisely.
What about other ways it shows up? You mentioned creating drama.
Oh, yeah. Self-generated drama is a classic. Starting pointless fights, picking up some time-consuming, maybe even destructive hobby.
Yeah.
Anything to divert your energy and attention away from the real work. And maybe its most cunning trick, using success itself as a weapon.
How does that work?
It makes you comfortable, complacent. You achieve something, get some recognition, and suddenly you're afraid to risk that status by trying something even bigger, something truly great next. Resistance wants you to play it safe.
Okay, so that's the enemy. Sophisticated, universal, insidious, even infallible. How do we possibly fight back? This gets us to Act Two, turning professional. What's the core difference he draws between the amateur and the professional?
Well, it's purely about mindset and identity. It's got nothing to do with whether you actually get paid for what you do.
Okay, so the amateur.
The amateur works only when they feel inspired.
Mm-hmm.
They're ruled by their mood, waiting for the muse to show up and, you know, sprinkle some magic dust. And they tie their self-worth completely to results, to external validation.
That sounds exhausting. Living and dying by the latest review or comment.
Totally exhausting. Now, the professional, on the other hand, is like a force of nature. They show up every day, same time, ready to work. Doesn't matter how they feel. Doesn't matter if the conditions are perfect.
They're committed for the long haul.
Decades, not days. That's how they think. And crucially, they work for the love of the craft itself, detached from the outcome.
So the main weapon against resistance isn't some stroke of genius. It's just attendance, sitting down every single day. That's the whole battle.
Pretty much. The professional accepts zero excuses. They focus intensely on technique, on getting better. They see the work itself as practice, not some high-stakes performance.
So if you're a writer, you just write, even if it's bad that day.
You write poorly until you write well. The point is the writing, not waiting for instant brilliance.
And this ties into that other concept he talks about, territory versus hierarchy. The amateur lives for the hierarchy, right? Climbing the ladder, getting praise, the bigger paycheck.
Exactly. And that makes them perpetually vulnerable because external rewards, rankings, praise, they're always shifting, always unstable.
So the professional focuses on?
The professional finds fulfillment in the territory, the immediate, tangible satisfaction of doing the work, mastering the craft. Their reward comes from the act itself, peaching well. The feel of the paint, the elegance of the code they just wrote.
The work is the reward.
Yes. And that makes them immune to the emotional roller coaster of external validation.
Okay. So once we manage that discipline, that focus on the territory, Pressfield says something kind of extraordinary happens. This takes us to Act Three, beyond resistance, accessing the muse, divine assistance. It sounds magical.
It does sound a bit out there, but he frames it as a very practical consequence of putting in the work.
Right. It's not magic you wait for.
No, it's the ultimate paradox, really. We often think we need inspiration before we can start working.
Yeah, wait for the mood to strike.
But Pressfield flips it. He argues that divine inspiration, the muse, whatever you want to call it, it's not the prerequisite for the work, it's the reward for the work.
Huh. So by turning pro, by showing up consistently day after day,
you're essentially signaling to those higher creative forces, okay, I'm serious now, I'm ready, send it in. You make yourself a vessel for it.
I love that idea that the muse favors the working stiff, you know? You don't have to be some special genius waiting for a lightning bolt.
You just have to be there consistently doing the work. And by overcoming resistance, by engaging in this hard daily practice, you're doing more than just making something.
It's spiritual, he says.
Yeah, you're fulfilling a calling, realizing your deepest self with a capital S, and offering your unique gift as a service to others. The struggle becomes the pathway to something, well, sublime.
That really elevates the daily grind, doesn't it? Okay, let's try to crystallize these takeaways for everyone listening. What are the absolute key messages we need to hammer home?
Okay, first, and I think this is the most psychologically powerful one, resistance as external antagonist. You have to change the language you use about your struggles.
Stop saying I'm lazy.
Exactly. Transform it from a personal feeling, I am lazy, I'm undisciplined, into a strategic fight against this external, impersonal force. Think, okay, I'm fighting resistance today. What's my plan?
That shift just removes so much shame, right? It lets you actually strategize instead of beating yourself up.
Instantly. Okay, theme two really raises the stakes. Calling as responsibility.
This is the idea that we kind of owe it to the world.
Yeah, Pressfield argues we have a moral obligation, almost, to develop and share whatever unique gift we have. If we don't answer that call, it's not just our loss.
It's a loss to everyone. We diminish the collective good by holding back.
Precisely. And finally, the absolute necessity of the long-term view.
Patience.
Fierce patience, yeah. True creators, the professionals, they think in terms of decades. Decades of practice, learning, honing the craft.
And that perspective protects you from what? Needing instant results.
Exactly. It shields you from that crippling anxiety of needing immediate gratification, instant success. If you're expecting a huge payoff tomorrow, Pressfield would say you're still thinking like an amateur.
His writing style is just so direct, punchy. It makes for really memorable lines.
Oh, totally quotable. Like this one, which just perfectly captures the inertia we all feel. It's not the writing part that's hard. What's hard is sitting down to write.
So true. The battle is won or lost in that single decision to just start, overcoming that initial barrier, not how complex the task actually is.
Right. And then there's the professional's mantra, the one about effort over outcome. The professional has learned that success is irrelevant. What matters is whether he did his work.
That's just liberating, isn't it? It frees you from needing external approval.
Totally. Focus only on the process, detach your identity from the results, and you can stay consistent day after day.
And the last quote, the one that acts like our guide.
The compass, quote, "The more important a call or action is to our soul's evolution, the more resistance we will feel toward pursuing it."
Fear is confirmation. Just tattoo that somewhere. Okay, let's bring this down to earth. How can listeners apply this philosophy practically? Especially if they're not, you know, writing the great American novel. Maybe they're in corporate life or learning a skill or just trying to be better parents.
Great question. Okay, application number one. Establish a daily creative practice with non-negotiable time. And creative here is broad.
That's has to be art.
Not at all. It could be committing, say, 45 minutes every single morning to deep strategic planning for your business. Or finally tackling that complex software you need for your next career move. Or maybe it's having that difficult but necessary conversation you keep putting off.
And the key is non-negotiable.
Treat it like a job you cannot miss. No excuses. Second application, the identity shift. Move from trying to being.
Give me an example.
Okay, if you're pursuing fitness, don't just say, I'm trying to get fit. Adopt the identity. I am an athlete. Or I am someone who prioritizes health. If you're learning something new, I am a committed learner.
Not just, I'm trying to learn this program.
Right. Because that identity shift fundamentally changes how you approach excuses.
Yeah.
A committed learner finds a way. Someone just trying finds a reason to stop. Resistance can't gain traction as easily against a declared identity.
That's powerful. Okay, last one.
Use fear as navigation. Actively identify what high-value activity you are avoiding specifically because it fills you with dread.
That difficult proposal, the tough personnel decision, finally launching the side hustle.
Exactly. Recognize that heavy, sinking feeling, not as a warning to retreat, but as the flashing neon sign indicating this is the path forward. This is where the growth lies. Go towards the fear.
Wow. Okay, wrapping up. What surprised me most rereading this for our chat was that idea that inspiration is actually earned.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not some magical gift bestowed on the worthy. It's the reward for just showing up consistently, even when it feels completely unglamorous. The muse really does favor the working stiff.
I love that. And for me, the key learning that always sticks is the power of externalizing resistance.
Taking it out of yourself.
Exactly. Stop punishing yourself, thinking I'm lazy or I lack willpower. Recognize it as this universal strategic opponent. That shift from self-blame to like a strategic battle plan, that's what finally lets you move forward.
Okay, so here's a final thought for you, our listener, to take away. If the struggle, the fear, the resistance is truly proof of importance, what important thing are you avoiding right now? Think about that one project, that one call, that one action resistance is fighting hardest against in your life, and maybe make that your non-negotiable commitment for tomorrow morning.
Suit up, turn professional, and go to war with it.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.